Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, November 12th. I'm Ray Graff, Pets and Vets today, and joining us, Dr. Susan Sekuli of Just Cats Veterinary Clinic in Guilderland at Mechanicville, and Dr. Chris Dallas of Ancient Arts Holistic Veterinary Services in Saratoga Springs. If you have a question about your dog or cat, give us a call, 800-348-2551. It's a pretty popular show, so you might want to call early and get in line, 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, our number, and it's a call-in show, let's be fair, 800-348-2551. Dr. Sekuli, Dr. Dallas, and your pet questions coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Pets and Vets today. Here to take your calls, Dr. Susan Sekuli of Just Cats Veterinary Clinic in Guilderland and the metropolis of Mechanicville. Also, Dr. Chris Dallas of Ancient Arts Holistic Veterinary Services in Saratoga. Dr. Sekuli is a vet who has been specializing in feline care. She focuses on the entire cat's health, behavior, nutrition, providing medical and surgical care. In October, Susan will celebrate the 31st anniversary of the opening of Just Cats, but that was last month, so it's already happened. Congratulations to Susan. Dr. Dallas specializes in treatment of chronic health issues in pets using an integrative approach with an emphasis on Chinese medicine. She specializes in acupuncture, Chinese herbal medicine, geriatric care, and nutrition counseling. The number to call is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Now, the emails are tricky on Pets and Vets. We need as much information as we can get, but we also need it to be concise enough to read in an hour-long program. So you try to do that, and it's voxpop@wamc.org. Dr. Susan Sekuli, wonderful to see you again. How is Mechanicville?
Nice to see you too, Ray. It's wonderful. I love the space. It's quiet. Every room, I think because it was an urgent care way back when, it's very private.
Oh,
so
nice.
One cat to the next cat can't even
Do the cats appreciate
cats
that?
Absolutely appreciate that.
Are you close to the Hudson? Yeah. Do you take a swim in the Hudson at lunch?
A walk along.
Oh, you take a walk?
Nice.
Dr. Chris Dallas, Ancient Arts Holistic Veterinary Services, how are you doing?
Doing well, thank you. Getting back to work after a hiatus for some family care.
Well, good to have you back on the show.
Thank you.
I'll try to go easy on you today. Right?
It's good to be back.
All right. Well, I have emails here. If there's anything you want to talk about to start, I see you're raising your hand.
Yes,
it's like a classroom.
I am. Okay.
Ms. Sekuli, go ahead.
I have to note, I went to a Feline Veterinary Medical Association meeting in September, and it was really nice to see the complementary stuff mentioned a lot. The two topics were dental stuff and kidneys. And so they mentioned a lot, and I mentioned this to Chris, because kidneys are challenging in cats.
Yeah.
And to be able to show and on studies that the herbs and the supplements are really showing a difference with it.
Such as?
Oh, that's nice.
I knew you were going to ask. Yeah. So the standard process, the renal support one, and there's a newer one, Avinavest.
Nice.
And it's amazing. And then there's one that's supposed to help with muscle, increasing muscle tone.
Myos, is it possible?
Yes,
yeah.
Myos,
yeah.
That's it. So yeah, I knew you'd get you a couple of these.
And then in Chinese medicine, we use Raymania, which increases blood flow and actually can reverse renal damage.
Excellent.
So we use raw Raymania for cats that are hot, and then we use because that can cool them off, and we would use like a cooked up Raymania blend for cats that are cool, because that could warm them up. So
we'd pick
and usually it's blended with other herbs that might help improve their appetite, depending on what the pattern
and
is.
And I think that comes from, you know, we do early diagnosis now, right? So we're knowing, they're starting to lean toward kidney problems, and we stage them 1 to 4.
Yeah.
Well, a fair number of our 10, 12-year-olds are coming in with stage 2 now. And the client's like, well, what do I do? And I go, I don't know. So now it's nice to go, well, let's start supplementation.
Yeah, great. That's awesome. Further. What's the latest, are they saying now, about protein intake? Because for a long time, they were going right to like strict protein.
So it's the phosphorus levels, right?
Yeah.
So they're paying attention to those and recognizing that they need the protein, right?
Good. So, I'm so glad to hear that. Because holistic vets have been singing that tune for a long time, but we really needed the evidence. You know, that was, I think, coming more from instinct and common sense as, and not as much from studies. And we really needed the science. So that's good to hear.
Yeah.
Well, good.
Okay. Do you want to come back in, Ray?
No, listen. I just went out and got a cup of coffee. No, keep going. It's Pets and Vets today with Dr. Susan Zakuli and Dr. Chris Dallas. 800-348-2551 if you have a pet question. 800-348-2551. Or you can email the show at voxpop@wamc.org. This one's from Tammy in Troy. Subject heading, tapeworm in kittens. I'm fostering three kittens, one female, two males, who are about 7 months old. All are fully vetted, including multiple rounds of deworming meds. Last night, I found a tapeworm segment on one of the boys. I have an appointment for them to be treated with praziquantel. Forget it. You guys can say the proper name. I have a few questions about this condition and its treatment. One, how quickly will the meds take effect? Two, are there any side effects I should look out for? Three, the female weighs about 5 pounds, at least 2 pounds smaller than the brothers. She eats ravenously, but gains weight very slowly. Would tapeworms explain her diminutive size and huge appetite? I have not seen any segments on her, but I assume all three kitties are infected, and that's from Tammy and Troy.
You want that
no,
one?
No, you go for it.
That's all you. That one's a good one. So the reason they probably didn't get dewormed for the tapeworms is most times for young kittens we give them Parentel Poamoate, which is a roundworm medication,
right,
and they check for that. And so the tapeworms most likely are either from fleas or from rodents, and most times in kittens I think it's fleas.
Fleas, yeah.
That show up. So let's see, the no side effects with it. It kills them like immediately.
Really?
And then you will not see them come out. They just kind of burst.
Melt, yeah.
In the intestine. And they don't really cause a problem. They bother us more than they bother the cat. Mm-hmm. So they hang out in the small intestine, I think, and then those proglottids, those tapeworm segments that look like rice that everybody sees when the cat has the tapeworms, is the eggs that then have to go through the flea cycle, that then the cat eats the flea. And the cycle continues. So they're not contagious cat to cat from tapeworm to tapeworm, although we do deworm them both because they probably got exposed to fleas.
Now, will Tammy be at risk for having tapeworm?
Not at all.
No.
They're very species specific.
Right. And only if she ate a flea.
Oh. Well, you know, maybe.
And it actually is. Know. No, and actually, you're right. It's species specific.
Yeah.
All right. Number here is 800-348-2551.
She's quite informed.
800-348-2551 is the number. Having a little problem again with our phone system. Had this on Tuesday. Don't worry. It's okay. The phones are working. You can call in. I just... you know, I'm having a little trouble with my screen on my side.
Okay.
But it's okay. We got to reboot that one on that side, Zach, after the show. Not today. 800-348-2551 is the number. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Here's an interesting one. And we'll let you tackle this before the break, and then we'll take a break and hit the phones. This is from Mai in Troy. I've never seen one like this. So here we go.
Oh, dear.
No, this is a family member was red flagged for animal abuse by a vet for not facilitating life-saving surgery for a pet. But I have never abused animals. I tried adopting recently, and since I'm in the same household, was denied. I've been a foster and cannot even do that right now. What can I do? If anything, it's breaking my heart. And that's from Mai and Troy.
Wow.
Mm.
I didn't even know that was a
Is there a thing. Registry or something? I mean,
I have not heard of that.
Me neither. How sad.
Flagged for not providing life-saving surgery.
But some people can't afford
some
life-saving surgery.
Some people cannot
surgery.
Afford that.
Yeah.
Huh.
Wow.
I am not sure what to say about that.
Yeah, me neither. I have never
And who
heard
could
of
they talk to? To maybe
another Humane Society?
I was going to say like ASPCA perhaps.
Yeah. Maybe the Legal Aid Society or you know, I think like Albany Law offers pro bono in some cases, but that's an interesting situation.
That's very sad.
I have never actually heard of that before. Mm. I would maybe start with, either ASPCA or call Mohawk Hudson and just kind of get some advice on that.
Yeah. All right. Number here is 800-348-2551. Tell you what, Zach the engineer, I'm going to thrash this laptop until it's smashed into smithereens. So while I do that, let's take a break with some soothing music, and then we'll get to the calls. 800-348-2551. Is our number. It's Pets and Vets today with Dr. Chris Dallas and Dr. Susan Sicculi. I tell you what we'll do. We're just going to wing it here. I know Andrea Leong's over there screening the calls. So I can't see it on the computer, but I can see it on the phone. And I'm going to South Egremont, Massachusetts right now. And it's Megan's turn. Hello, Megan. You're on.
Oh, wow. Hi. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. How are you?
Good. I had a question about my yellow lab who suffers from chronic ear infections and I guess environmental allergies in general.
Oh boy.
And yeah, I just thought the main thing that people recommend over and over again is Apoquel, this allergy pill, which I understand hasn't been tested very well for long-term effects. And I was very curious when I heard you had a holistic doctor if there were other options. Rather, I mean, we also have tried raw food and all of these things, but I hate just giving him a pill over and over again that we don't know the long-term effects.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not a huge fan of Apoquel. I agree with you. Labs are kind of the classic dog in Chinese medicine. We call them damp heat dogs.
Why do you call them damp heat dogs?
Well, because, you know, an ear infection, as you can imagine, is literally it's hot and it is sticky. Mm-hmm. And so we call that damp heat. So one thing that could be going on with your dog is he could be dealing with actually just chronic ear infections, meaning that the infection extended into his middle ear and he may be reinfecting himself. And, you know, a raw diet for a lab is great, but if he's got middle ear infections, he could end up reinfecting himself no matter what. And that's kind of a complex conversation, but I usually draw out a diagram of the ear. But the eardrum separates the external canal from the middle ear. And you can clean that external canal and medicate it all day long. But if it went into the middle ear, which is past the eardrum, he can continue to get reinfected. So I will use Chinese herbs to try to dry that up, but it can take a long time, like more than a year to get to the bottom of that. But, you know, backing up a little bit, you know, chronic ear infections in a dog are considered to be diet related. That is dermatology 101 in vet school. I have seen some labs who seem to have a seasonal component to it, and I do, and it does seem to be more of a springtime thing that they seem to break out in spring with them as well. So I do think it's just that added heat that's coming on seasonally. So yes, I agree with you. Apoquel makes me take pause. Sometimes I will use a Cytopoint injection to really get my patients through the tough time of year. But I'll try to, you know, manage them with herbs and diet most of the time. You know, some good fish oil. A good fish oil can sometimes pipe down with the inflammation. Checking vitamin D levels. Like, there's lots of things to do, but it is a multimodal approach. Unfortunately, allergies do not have a simple answer. So,
and I have to pipe in because my sister has a yellow lab.
Oh, great.
She passed away just recently.
I'm sorry.
But she was on the raw diet, and it became absolutely noticeable when she took her off chicken.
Really?
Yes, that's true.
Chicken was such a challenge.
It's very hot. It's a hot protein.
It's a hot one, and she put her on.
My dog can't
turkey,
do
turkey, beef, and then tripe.
Yeah, my dog can't do chicken either, and she's not even a hot dog.
Going with the diet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I agree.
It's amazing.
It can be very expensive for a large dog.
It is. Yeah. It is. We have some good local options, though, foods that are made here locally that are actually really affordable.
Yes,
it almost ends up being the same as kibble.
Yep.
So, yeah, just kind of keep asking around. And yeah, exactly. I can't give out names, but
right.
You can definitely just through the grapevine, you'll find them.
Agreed.
Well, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's Pets and Vets Today with Dr. Susan Ciculli and Dr. Chris Dallas. And let's go to Jo Ellen in Altamont. Jo Ellen, you're on.
Thank you so much. Dr. Sue, it's so good to hear your voice. You kept my mittens alive for 21 years.
Oh, wow.
Hey, Joe Allen.
And for the last three of those years, he was incontinent. Now I'm thinking about getting a new fur baby, and I was curious if I need to rip out all my carpets and replace them before doing that.
Interesting.
Probably not a bad idea. Seriously.
Was it urinary? Is it urinary?
Urinary.
So why is that an important thing, Doc?
Because I think the new kitten will smell the
lingering odor. Yeah.
And that's a problem? I mean, the kitten
and
has...
then they'll continue to go on that carpet.
Oh, I see. Yeah. I see. Yeah. They think it's okay because of the smell.
The smell. Yeah. Yes.
Gotcha.
Exactly.
All right, Jo Ellen, you want to follow up?
I was afraid that was going to be the answer, but I really appreciate
Sorry.
The honesty.
Well, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551. What is that stuff that cleans it up?
There's a bunch.
Enzyme stuff?
Yeah, there's some enzymes.
That would be...
It's helpful, but I don't know. If you're bringing in a new animal, I'd start from fresh.
That's an expensive proposition
it
if you're going to get a kitty cat. You know,
maybe
you have to
they
spend
go to the worst places, right, and get the most where she knew the most of it was.
I mean, could she use a black light and find the spots?
After 3 years, I don't know if that would still show up.
That's a great question. Mm. Yeah. I'm not sure, but it does help. It does delineate where the urine is. Good, smart idea.
All right. Well, thank you. I'm full of smart ideas that don't work. Eileen in Rosendale writes in, what suggestions do you have to help an orange male FIV cat with worsening anemia, HCT 16.9. He's getting vitamins with iron without improvement and eats well. All right, so FIV is what?
Feline immunodeficiency virus, so like the AIDS of cats.
And then HCT 16.9 means what?
That it's pretty low. Normal should be over around 30.
What's this, a hemoglobin count or something?
Hematocrit.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
It's the percentage of blood that is red blood cells.
Okay. All right. So anyway, there's the question. What do you think?
How old was he again?
Doesn't say.
Okay.
Oh. Orange male cat, though.
That's not a great one. I don't know if there's any herbs would do.
No, not really. And erythropoietin, do you use that in them?
Not really.
Yeah.
Nope. I'm sorry. Okay. I don't know if I have. I mean, low doses of prednisolone maybe have been helpful. You know, not enough to be immunosuppressive, but maybe to kickstart the bone marrow a little bit, a little. That's it.
Okay.
That's a tough one.
Let's see if we can.
Always the sweetest cats in the whole wide world.
I'm sorry. All right, let's go to Canada Joe Harry. Looks like it's Marianne's turn. Marianne, you're on.
I wanted to sort of address a concept that a previous caller had, and that is just frustration and difficulty it is sometimes to adopt a cat the quote-unquote right way because of how strict a lot of these shelters are. For instance, several years ago, I wanted to adopt a cat, and I'd never owned a cat before. I was a dog person, but I lived in a building that didn't allow dogs, and I thought, well, why not try this whole cat business? And because I had never owned a cat, no place would adopt to me.
No way.
I did eventually have, I literally had to go on Craigslist and type in free cat. I ended up with a wonderful cat. She was a senior cat, and she ended up passing away that last year. And then my attempt to adopt a cat this year, I ran into similar problems because they wanted references of people that had cat sit my cat, and it was a required category in the application.
What the?
What?
But I had never had somebody cat sit my cat. I took her with me when I traveled.
Oh, wow. My goodness. That's a little intense.
And I wonder if, like, I understand why shelters, you know, don't want to adopt to people who might abuse their cats or mistreat the cats.
Right.
But there is an extreme overpopulation of cats in shelters.
Yeah.
And do they really have the luxury to be so restrictive?
That's interesting.
And I'm wondering what, as veterinarians, what your take on that is.
I would agree.
It's gone too far.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. That seems really extreme to me. And to your point, I know a lot of veterinarians who've been turned down from adopting dogs because they didn't have a fenced-in yard, for example.
What?
Because they, let's say, they live on farms and they didn't trust the veterinarians
parents,
to take care of
my
dogs.
My parents live on a Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean
to. No, it's okay. That's okay. But just to your point, to support your point, I mean, I'm not sure there's somebody more well-suited to take care of a dog appropriately than a veterinarian. I can't imagine turning down a vet from adopting a dog. So I think it has gone a little bit too far in the other direction.
Are these independent rules, or are these—
These are like rescues, for example.
But
that
are there state rules or county rules, or is this just the rescues rule?
These are just the rescues rules.
Maybe management ought to be spoken to. You know what I mean?
Take it to the manager.
Sorry, Marianne. 800-348-2551. And it's Pets and Vets Today with Susan Ciculli.
You caught Ray at a time to
I know.
Put it down the line.
If I swear, please hit the red button. I'm still trying to fix this computer. Yeah, good times. Let's go to Preston Hollow and Beth. Hello, Beth. You're on.
Hi. I have a 14-year-old Weinheimer, and it's got some kidney issues, but more so dental hygiene is just terrible, and the teeth, probably most of his teeth have to be pulled, but at that age, we were told surgery is probably very dangerous and not advisable. So I'm wondering, number one, how we can treat him to make things better or at least make him comfortable?
Oh, that's a tough one. We do deal with this in our practice all the time. Well, pain management is important, I would say that. If he has infections everywhere, which I assume he does, it is considered acceptable to do what's called pulse antibiotic therapy, which is, a number of weeks on oral antibiotics and then a number of weeks off. I have mixed feelings about this because I don't think it's great antibiotic stewardship. But I have done it in cases where I feel that we've had a major improvement in quality of life, but I do it judiciously. Mm-hmm. And depending on your dog's kidney function, I don't think it's necessarily that necessarily precludes, a dental procedure, and it can be a huge improvement in quality of life. Your veterinarian can choose to maybe just remove teeth that are actively infected to reduce the amount of time your dog's under anesthesia. And with proper, blood pressure monitoring and IV fluids before and after, you really can prevent a lot of the, issues that some of the damage to kidneys that can happen with anesthesia. So it can be done well. And sometimes in the long run, it actually extends their life. So
I agree with you
do.
That one, Has he had dental procedures in the past?
No, not yet. But we have to put him under just to get his nails trimmed. He's just so out of control.
Oh,
and
boy.
The last time we did it. It took him like 4 or 5 days to recover from that. And
well, if you had a dental, you could have a really good nail treatment.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not.
Antibiotic.
What's that?
Sorry.
Oh, that's okay.
And the pulse antibiotic treatment is which antibiotic would you say?
We usually use clindamycin because it has some. It has bone. It can penetrate bone, but it's really a very temporary measure. I did do this with my dog because he had gone into congestive heart failure, and he just wasn't a candidate for anesthesia. And I found, if I kept him on it for 3 weeks, he'd be good for maybe 2 or 3 weeks, and then it would just be back again, the odor. So it really wasn't ideal. But I was really backed into a corner with him. And then he ended up living longer than I expected. So we did it for years.
Oh, boy.
I know. He just was like a, he just was one of those Energizer bunnies. But if he hadn't had the heart failure, I 100% would have put him under anesthesia. But nobody was willing to do it
and
for
I
me.
And I do think you could look around. I think there are veterinarians that feel very comfortable in doing geriatrics. Patients, both dog and cat. And so, you know, see if your vet is not comfortable with that, see if you could get a referral.
Yes.
All right, Beth, thanks a lot for the call. Number here is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Ladies, our long national nightmare is over.
Ooh, look at that.
I got the computer screen working. You know
what?
I can multitask here. What did I miss on the show? this email from Robin in Albany. We have a sensitive, people-reactive dog, and for the past 4 years have been diligently seeking a behavioral vet in the area or within 50 to 75 miles. Any suggestions? We really don't want to do recommendations, but if there are those in towns, you could say, well, there's so-and-so in this town.
I don't actually. Board-certified, I'd have to say Cornell is probably
closest. I think there's a couple down in New Jersey that I
New Jersey.
Okay.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there is not anyone local.
Anyone in the Hudson Valley that you know of?
Not that I know
of. Guardian, perhaps? No.
How would you look? How would you do research into that?
Just board-certified veterinary behavioral.
Yeah, yep. Okay.
Behaviorist.
Here we go with one from Alicia, 800-348-2551. Back to the phones in a minute. I've heard of the benefits of the one meal a day diet for dogs. How would you transition a dog to eat like that? He can't tell me if he's hungry, so how does it work? I find most animals could tell you when they're hungry, but what do you think?
I know the cats do.
I guess I would just slowly decrease the one meal. The amount in the one meal and slowly increase the amount in
Is
the
that
other
a
meal.
New thing?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not, I don't really, I'm kind of agnostic to the one meal a day versus the two meal a day. Yeah. I think if I had a deep chested dog, I probably wouldn't do a one meal a day just because unless they had a gastropexy, which is when they tack the stomach to the body wall, just because I'd be worried about a bloat. But
why would they tack the stomach to the body?
Well, there's deep-chested dogs can be susceptible to a torsion or a bloat of the stomach.
Yeah,
so,
I remember that.
Yeah, and so a larger meal, I think, might make them more susceptible to that.
Okay, fair enough.
But if I were going to do it, I would say just slowly reduce the amount of the one meal you want to eliminate and slowly increase the amount of the other meal and then just eliminate it altogether.
All right. Now that we have our phone system working again to 100% capacity, I'll give you the number again, and then we'll hit the phones again after the break. 800-348-2551 if you have a pet question for Dr. Susan Ciculli and Dr. Chris Dallas. 800-348-2551. So getting on to this topic that Mai brought up from Troy, this is from Gracie in Sheffield, Mass.
Ooh.
Black flagged is the subject heading. At the vets, I'm known as the animal rescuer. We also adopted a cat the shelter and two other families had given up on, and we turned her into a sweet cat for 11 more amazing years. But the only time we ever officially adopted a pet, I was allergic to the cat, and we had to return her. So I am blacklisted at the Humane Society and could never adopt from them again. That's according to Gracie.
Wow.
I have not vetted this information, but Gracie's a regular correspondent.
Interesting. I don't get involved in that much, so this is all news to me.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you really can't answer that one, I guess. Huh. Let's go to Erica in Red Hook, who says, I recently adopted a four-month-old kitten. She has a self-sucking habit. This usually happens at night to settle herself down. Should I discourage, distract her to break the habit? I read this could lead to skin issues if it continues into adulthood.
She might start sucking on the owner.
All right. So you take it from there.
What do you say, Sue?
It's hard to distract them. Yeah. It really is. I think it's something she's just going to have to recognize that's going to happen.
I had a little kitty like that once long ago.
Yep.
Some
of them don't.
And that's because they're weaned too soon?
They say, although then I've seen it in kittens that are not weaned early. I think that's just their nature.
And while we're on the subject of things like that, why do cats need piles of blankets or soft
that's
clothing.
That's a contentment thing.
Is it?
Oh, absolutely.
It doesn't go back to pressing against mama's belly when
Right, but
feeding?
They're doing that for contentment. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not trying to get the milk. Don't go
well,
there.
Well, you can't get milk out of a blanket. If you can, you win some sort of a prize. Let's take a break, and then we'll go back to the phones. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's Pets and Vets with Dr. Susan Ciculli, Dr. Chris Dallas, and we'll be back after some lovely music and some underwriting. It's Pets and Vets today. Vox Pop 800-348-2551 is the number. Ray Graff with you, and we're joined by Dr. Susan Ciculli and Dr. Chris Dallas. And now let's go headlong into a vast number of calls. Pam is in Somers, Mass. Pam, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
I wasn't really calling with a question.
Oh.
I was calling with kind of information. I have a male cat. Well, I have four cats, but I have one male cat that was constantly peeing on everything in the house, but especially me.
Ah, splendid.
Oh, peeing on my clothes, my shoes, me when I'm in bed, etc. I had him to the vet a million times for UTIs and things like that, and I put additives in his litter box. We did all kinds of things to try to stop him from peeing. And finally, they told me I was probably going to have to give him up for adoption if I couldn't stop it, which I did not want to do. But anyways, I just wanted to say, in the end result, his brother passed away 3 years ago, and since that boy died, he has never peed on anything since then. So the whole thing was jealousy.
Interesting. Or territory.
Stress.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. So feel away might have cured that.
Maybe, or maybe not. It's just, yeah. We never know what they're thinking.
Go ahead.
I know. I spent so much money on vet bills and all kinds of additives and all kinds of stuff, and nothing ever worked. And then when the other one passed away, I thought, oh, my God, he's a different cat.
That's
interesting. Yeah, so there was dynamics going on between those two cats. That
happens, though,
that
right?
That happens, yeah.
All right. Pam, thank you for that very descriptive. 800-348-2551. Let's go to Mitch in Bearsville. Hello, Mitch. You're on.
Hello. Thank you for taking the call.
Sure.
My son's adopted cat. He rescued it when the cat was a three-legged female. He got her out of a rescue pound, and he got her when she was 1 year old. They don't know why she had an accident of some sort. But anyway, I got her. I've had her almost a year now. She's very affectionate. She sleeps most of the time, but she also likes to come in the bed and sleep snuggle next to me. But she also sits next to me on the couch, and I pet her a lot. But when I pet top of her head, which she likes, she will then turn around and give me a bite, like a little one little sharp fang, and and it bleeds.
I don't like
that. She purrs when she does that.
She purrs.
Someone told me that that's a sign of affection.
Is she
somebody
a calico?
Who has all these cats and dogs.
Is this a calico by any chance?
No.
Oh, okay. Oh, I was sure that was
no. She's just a regular looking house cat, you know, except with three legs. And she gets around. She can jump up on the bed. She can jump up on the couch. She's very sweet,
If you pet her under the chin, what happens?
No, I try to avoid that.
So anywhere on her body?
No, I don't pet her under the chin.
Let me ask you a question, Mitch.
I pet her whole body on top, you know, the top of her back, and I pet the top of her head.
Okay.
And she likes it when I, you know, sort of scratching the top of her head, but I think she likes it so much that she bites me.
All right, let me ask you a question,
I can't
Mitch.
Figure it out.
This is an important diagnostic question based on my experience with cats. When you are petting the kitty's head, are you doing it from behind or forward? I find that if I want to pet Mitchell on the head and I reach directly for Mitchell so that Mitchell sees my hand coming straight ahead, that's when I'll get a good old bite. Of course, Mitchell never breaks the skin, but I think that's an instinct. And so if you catch the cat from behind, it doesn't happen. Does that happen to you?
Yes, it happens. No, it's usually from behind that I pet her.
Interesting.
You know, I just thought.
Well, and I guess
I thought about getting something that they use. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I guess my point is it just the head, or is it any part of her that you pet that she attacks you?
Sometimes her back, when it's her upper back part, you know, she's got very soft fur.
She may have a threshold.
She's very loving, but she'll turn around and try to bite me, but I always get my arm out of there. And while she's purring, she's always purring. She seems to have three different purrs, by the way.
You probably have thin skin. In my youth, I had a Siamese cat, Seal Point, and we played. I mean, this cat would scratch, and it wouldn't bother me. But now that I'm older, my skin is thinner, the cat would have ripped me to shreds.
Mm.
Yep.
So maybe the cat doesn't know.
I think that maybe it's my age.
Good point.
Try to decrease the amount of petting you're doing. Like, she might just have this threshold that she wants you to pet her two times.
Ah.
And even though she's purring at you, she really doesn't want you to do the third one.
Yeah.
Or wear gloves. Mitch, thank you very much. Let's go to Joan in Longmeadow. Joan, you're on.
Oh, hi. Good afternoon. I'm so glad you took my call.
You bet.
We adopted a 10 month a female from American Lab Rescue. They said she was a lab mix. When she arrived with her veterinary records, she was noted as being a lab Great Pyrenees cross. Very sweet, gentle with people when other dogs, until around 2 years old, she became more vigilant, increasingly vigilant around people and other dogs. And she made up her own mind, depending on who they were, she might air bite, those were the trainer's words, or growl at people, or pin other dogs. She never pursued or was aggressive beyond that. Unfortunately, our early on training class was disrupted by COVID, so she did have that isolation problem happening there. Mm. We've worked with trainers and behaviorists, and as an aside, New York Times had recommended the EMBARK genealogy test, which showed her to be a quarter Pyrenees, a quarter Labrador, and half Anatolian Shepherd. We keep working with, we're actively working now with a trainer who deals with dogs who are aggressive, but I'm becoming more concerned that she's not being aggressive. She's being who she is.
Right.
And I've been trying to work on behavior modification with her to try to, use calming strokes when she sees another dog, just piecing this together from online. Mm-hmm. Block her view of the other dog, use strong, soothing strokes from her head down her neck.
Yep.
Tell her relax.
Mm-hmm.
When the other dog passes, she gets a little bit of a treat.
Mm-hmm.
She's starting to respond now to my saying, relax, relax.
Mm-hmm.
But, again, I just started to be concerned. It struck me, she's not aggressive. She's not ferocious.
Yeah.
She's being what she is.
Mm-hmm.
And how do I walk that line, or can I walk that line?
Yeah, that's a complex conversation. Probably too complex to have here, but you may want to play around with, I wonder if there are people in the area, trainers in the area, who specialize in either this breed or this type of, herding breed, because they are different. They're all different, and they give different cues. They respond to different cues. Sometimes avoidance is a little bit better than, going forward and addressing the triggers directly. I don't know. I mean, I think this is a little too complex here to talk about it, but I think you're onto something. And I've been doing something similar with my dog, who I also got literally a month before the COVID shutdown. And it's been working pretty well. So if that's working, then you know, keep following that. But I tend to walk my dog either late at night or really early in the morning to avoid some of those triggers. You know,
I don't expect to integrate her.
Yeah, you know, same, with other people. Same. Right, right.
All right, Joan. Yeah. Hey, thanks a lot for the call. Appreciate it.
It's hard work. It's
worth it?
Dog reactivity and is difficult. And I don't deal with the human piece. Like my dog is bomb proof with people.
Right.
So I at least have that. And it would be very. I'd be more concerned if I had to deal with that because I have children who come to the house too. Right. But the dog piece is. It's easy to avoid other dogs.
It's a tough conversation. It really is because you see. Like I'm on a couple of Facebook groups with other veterinarians and they talk about the aggression both in the household and that they're seeing in the veterinary offices.
Right.
And it seems to be increasing.
Incredible. And then so sociologists or pundits would say, oh, it's increasing across, you know, society.
Well, people. Right. I know.
Is there a root cause for both?
Yeah.
I don't know.
All right. Well, that's another show. Sundance is in Albany. Hi, you're on.
Hey, I know I've got a dog question about my bully breed dog that has trigeminal nerve damage. You know, got a tumor probably. I chose not to go with the expensive, expensive testing that would be thousands and thousands of dollars. But we know that that's what's going in. Half of her, you know, she's lost muscle mass on part of her skull and around her eye.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering if there's any Chinese medicines or even acupuncture or something to help increase muscle mass.
How old's your dog?
That might work.
How old's your dog?
He's six.
Six.
Hmm. You think there's a tumor there? I mean, did you...
Well, you know, the only thing that can be assessed without, you know, having an MRI would be, that it's probably a tumor on the trigeminal nerve.
Okay.
Otherwise she's, you know, a pretty healthy dog.
Yeah. I'm trying to think, you know, I've done acupuncture for facial nerve paralysis, which is usually idiopathic, meaning we don't know why it happens. And, you either get results immediately or you don't. And then if you keep trying, it generally isn't going to happen. So it might be worth a try, to do like a couple of sessions. Well, if you've already got muscle atrophy, then you probably have to do it more than just a couple of sessions. With the facial nerve paralysis, I was looking for immediate change in, you know, I wanted to see a blink reflex and what have you, you know, pretty quickly. You're talking about muscle atrophy now, right? Around.
Yeah. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, because she's lost some muscle mass, like, you know, on the side of her head behind her eye, you know, her vision is occluded by her eyelid that's drooping.
Mm.
So, and I don't know, how would you, I mean, I'm willing to try.
Yeah.
You know, I know she's not in any pain, but how would you do that on a dog and have them not be reactive?
We have our ways. We use tiny needles on the face.
Okay.
I use little hand needles, which are so small, and that way when they move their head, they don't go flying out. And you'd be surprised. We have our ways. And part of it is just creating an environment that's very calm and soothing,
right.
So it's not a high stress environment, and a lot of treats are usually involved, and you know, everyone's calm, which creates a space that allows it to happen.
I know,
but
you know,
go ahead.
Yeah, because she is a bully breed, you know, her typical visits, you know, I could do anything to her.
Yeah,
I mean, I could pull her teeth out if I want.
Yep.
You know what I mean? I could do anything to her. But she gets more reactive at the typical vet visits.
Sure.
Where, you know, people are trying to, like, gang up on her.
Of course, of course. Yep. Yeah,
but
it just depends on the environment.
Might work. But... I mean, I'm willing to give it a shot. Yeah.
Yeah, it might be worth a shot. If it's a tumor, it's probably not going
to
be something that's reversible. But if it's a functional problem or a problem like an idiopathic problem, I think maybe there's a shot. But
all right. Sundance, thanks for the call. This email from Ann. Our 14-and-a-half-year-old female domestic shorthair cat was recently diagnosed with hyperthyroidism. Less than 1 month into medication management, she's lethargic, and her picky appetite is nearly non-existent. Repeat lab work is entirely normal, including thyroid. The vet suspects an underlying malignancy. One dose of mirtazapine, 3.75 milligrams, has improved her appetite but resulted in anxiety. I will half the dose next or opt for the topical preparation. But you did mention early in the show that there are natural appetite stimulants for cats. What would those be, and where may I find them, and guidelines for proper dosing? And that's from Anne.
I think I would look into further diagnostics to try to figure this out, because typically if it's hyperthyroidism and you've got the thyroid under control, things should equilibrate out for that cat. And if it doesn't, then I'd be looking further.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Doug, who says he is writing from Chile, Florida. Oh, yeah, that's nice. Guess
Wait
what, Doug?
A minute.
I think you'll be all right. Have a four-month-old kitten, black, that attacks and bites hard. What is the best way to stop this behavior? I read something about kittens that don't have litter mates do this. I don't know much about this kitten's past.
Mm-hmm. Yep, bite him back.
No, I'm kidding.
I'm kidding. But yes, it is redirecting, because they're just trying to play. Mm-hmm. So it is pulling something behind you, I've even gone to like a glove, right? So it's that. And they think it's that versus a hand.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see.
So
give them a toy, like put a toy instead of your hand or something. Yeah. Right. Something they can chew on.
And it'll resolve as they get a little bit older.
All right, a couple minutes left here. Let's grab a call from Sunderland, Massachusetts. It's Sue's turn. Hello, Sue.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yep.
I have a 5-year-old cat who has become very anxious about getting her nails clipped. She shakes, she moans, she tries to claw and bite. And as a result, every grooming service in our area and just now her vet have refused to clip her nails. She's not ingesting any medications to make her calmer. She sees right through that. The vet will only offer a sedated nail clipping, which is very expensive. So I'm looking for any advice about having her nails clipped, or if there are any products that serve as both a scratching pad and an emery board of some sort.
And you are trimming her nails because?
They're getting long and she's getting stuck on things, and I just thought they were supposed to be clipped periodically. But she's an indoor cat.
Right. Does she use a good scratching post? Like, do you have
she
one?
She does use the ones on the floor. She uses them often, so she knows how to do that. But they're not, they're just cardboard, and they're not shortening the nails at all, if that's important.
Yeah, so maybe looking for different scratching posts. I don't know. I'm trying to find solutions other than the
back of your couch.
Sedations.
It works for us.
I know.
She doesn't do any damage in the house, but I'm just wondering, is there anything that's sort of harder than cardboard that would also sort of dull the...
They're actually, I've seen these recently, too. They're pieces of wood. Like, right, if they were out in the wild, they'd be going again as a tree. And a tree is probably the best thing that they could use. And so they're starting to make these scratching posts that are pieces of wood, you know, like with bark or whatever on them. And they really have to dig into them. So start looking for those. I think that's where I would concentrate your efforts rather than trying to trim these every couple of months.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Because
Is it important to have them trimmed?
Not really on a young cat, right? Like if you have a good scratching post, and then they get older, then they're not grooming as well. Then I worry because then they're not using the scratching post at all. But at her age.
And the biting and scratching, is that...
she probably had a bad experience at one point, and now she hates her nails trimmed.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's hard to turn that around.
It is. It's really hard.
All right, well, we have to leave it there, Sue, but thank you so much. I'll tell you what, the password for today was bite. A lot of bites to questions. You know, if people want to find any, get in touch with Just Cats. How do they do that?
JustCatsVet.com.
And Dr. Chris Dallas, how do they do that for Ancient Arts?
AncientArtsVeterinary.com.
You guys are great. The clocks are off now, too, by the way. So that one was blinking for a while, and now it's different than this clock. So I'm discombobulated. Frankly,
you did a great job.
I'm ready for a bourbon, okay? Just saying. All right, listen, thanks both, and we will see you soon.
All right,
Support comes from Capital Region Classical, presenting pianist Jonathan Biss and violinist Mark Steinberg in program of Mozart Violin Sonatas, Sunday, December 14th, 3 p.m., capitalregionclassical.org. Acres, Alden Country Real Estate Services, a holistic transactional real estate brokerage serving the Berkshires of Western Massachusetts, berkshireacres.com for information. At Metroland Now, a Capital Region source for arts and entertainment, available in print and online for pickup locations, distribution, and advertising opportunities, themetroland.com. Thanks again to Susan Ciculli and Chris Dallas for being here today. Thank you for listening. We do Pets and Vets every month, so we'll have a show coming up in December. Our phones were screened by Andrea Leong. Thank you. Zach Malloy was our engineer. And thank you, Zach. Well, I got to tell you, this has been, you know, the ghost is in the machine. I'm not sure what's going on in Studio A, but good luck later in the day, people. We'll see you tomorrow for our final gardening show of 2025. See you, too.